Well, welcome to the Ralph Winterroad Show, coming to you live out of Alaska. This is Ralph Kermit Winterroad, second truth seeker of the far north. And, gosh, we're pushing about 14 hours of daylight up here, up from 5.5 hours December 21st, so almost 6 minutes a day. It really makes a big difference. It's just springtime is really great, actually, in Alaska. We don't have mosquitoes flying around, so the dust bombers, they're not out yet. All that white stuff is doing the magic thing and turning it into water, so that's a good thing. And it won't be too long in the trees here, but then when they get started, it takes them about a week, and they go from nothing to full leaves. We're going to have two guests coming on today here. They haven't called in yet, but Dr. Judy Wood, about 911, real facts and evidence. And then we're going to have John Hutchison. He's to be coming on about the Hutchison effect, and he's a scientist out of Canada that has demonstrated issues concerning Tesla that have a direct application to 911. And it should be a real interesting show here. I hope they both make it here. I haven't made it yet, but they're probably running a little bit late. But it's absolutely astounding about Tesla. He was just an absolutely astounding man. He invented the radio and not Marconi, alternating current, 111 thing, I think, patents. Just absolutely astounding. It's just hard to believe that we don't know much about Tesla. They didn't teach it in high school. So the question becomes then, why is that? Why don't we have somebody that he was a genius. So anyway, stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute, and we'll get our guests on here. And we're going to talk about a couple of things today. One is Tesla, and the other one is with John Hutchison in on the Hutchison effect. And I'm very honored. We're waiting for John to come online here, and I'm very honored to have Dr. Judy Wood back on again. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
I'm very honored to have somebody from academia that you have a PhD and you're a materials specialist in stress and I got to look at my email, look at all these things. You have so many. Maybe you could summarize all the things that the materials that you're specialized in.
Well, what is so unusual here is it almost seems like my life was preparing me for this event in just about every way I can imagine. One of the interesting things is also my bachelor's degree was in civil engineering, structural engineering, and then I went on to looking at engineering mechanics. My master's degree was in engineering mechanics, and my master's thesis was involved in developing an interferometer to study material properties. And my PhD, of course, was more of that, developing another type of interferometer for measuring thermal stresses in joints, of materials made of, dissimilar materials.
So your direction has really been pointed to in understanding what actually were going on with 911.
Exactly. Experimental stress analysis is sort of the general umbrella, but within that, my method of expertise is interferometry. And it turns out that was very applicable to what happened that day. So I couldn't help but see it in all of the images.
That sounds like one of them 25-cent words. Can you tell us, us people out here, and what that means?
Interferometry. It's interference. Think of, in the most simple sense, I think everyone now can still remember television reception with rabbit ears.
Oh, yes.
And then an airplane would fly overhead, and you'd get static on your TV.
Mm-hmm.
That was one signal interfering with another signal.
Okay.
And so there's different kinds of interference like that that can add and subtract and change the outcome. Another example, it was actually given to me by one of my former students. I met him in a convenience store, and he said, "Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about." It was beautiful. that he designs audio systems. And for example, in your living room, there are spots where you have constructive and destructive interference, where you have better sound or worse sound. Mm-hmm. And you can even cancel out sound. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a particular, if you know exactly how you're arranging your signal production, it is possible to get not only amplified effects, but almost unexpected effects, different type of effects. And it comes from interfering different types of energy. And that is where Nikola Tesla comes in.
Well, could you, so we get John on here, we've got a lot of issues, facts that I'd like to hear, evidence, because you're evidence and fact-driven. You're not into the conspiracy stuff. One of the most astounding things is the ceasing of these buildings to exist as we know them, standing up, doing what they do, in what, less than 10 seconds, and then being, I guess, I don't know if this word is your, maybe your... new word, justification, but 80% of the building's missing when it gets on the ground.
Or if it gets in the ground, 80% didn't hit the ground. But justification, I use, a lot of folks give me grief for that, but it is more scientific than anything else because we do not know that process. If you do not understand the phenomena or the process, then you can't use a known definition. You know, like hazy air, do you call it fog? Do you call it smoke? Those have specific definitions, and they imply specific meaning. We do not know. The tower was a solid material, and then it turned to dust in mid-flight. That's a new process.
And so there's videos like steel girders standing, and they're being dustified, I guess, or whatever the word. They're vanishing right in front of the video camera, right?
Exactly. It looks like someone described it as ice cream melting. I think that's a good description. It melts before it hits the ground. It turns into dust. But it's interesting. It's almost like an Alka-Seltzer tablet. It's an energized, kind of almost like a propulsion, you know, behind these objects. So I use the term dustification. It's not currently in the dictionary, but it will be.
Well, sure, it sure makes sense to me. So the thing is you've got a web page, Dr. Judy Wood, all one word with no periods, .com, and there's just so much information in there. But you have pictures of at the buildings after they didn't collapse, after they were
gone.
They ended up on the ground.
No, they went away. So most of the material is not there. It's gone someplace.
Yeah, and even the reporters were questioning that, weren't they, on the first day?
Oh yeah, and into the second day, but then they stopped questioning it because people kind of tend to go with the herd, and there was a lot of pressure on accepting what is, that, you know, that that's perfectly normal for, you know, whatever reason, the rationalization that was given. But on the first day, they were very, you know, speechless as to where did the building go? And we should continue asking that question.
Well, no kidding, because no matter how the building came down, which we're going to get into, buildings are not supposed to just poof, vanish. I mean, material, this is concrete, and this is steel. This isn't something made out of water or something and run away and hide.
Right. Or there's particles. It did kind of snow down all over Manhattan and points down the eastern seaboard. But after a long period of time, it stayed airborne. And that's another weird trait. A building that is brought down in controlled demolition, the dust from it, generally, it doesn't rise above the highest point on the building, you know, where it was standing before it went away.
Yeah, I've watched. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I gotta say, I've looked at several buildings that actually quite a few of them that would have been by demolitions, where they've been brought down, and it's nothing like what happened at the Twin Towers.
They go down. They don't go up.
Yeah, they go down and the dust goes down and settles for a little bit and the ball game over. And that picture that you've got that you're finishing up a new book here coming out shortly or soon, that picture is just, I think you call it a bubbler, but it looks like water flowing up and out. It's unbelievable.
Like a drinking fountain. Yeah,
like a drinking fountain. And this is a solid material.
The bubbler is the Midwestern term for drinking fountain.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a Jayhawker, and I missed that part.
Ah!
What do I know? You know, I went to a one-room schoolhouse and a very small high school, so, we didn't get into those really...
Yeah, the trendy terms.
Right. Well, so we have that issue to deal with. We got, say, 80% plus of the building. These are pictures not taken by you, by all sorts of people, including the government and police and all others, right?
Yes, and I think the wider the variety, the better, because if they all, tell the same story, then your story is pretty well confirmed.
Well, I think we can say that that's a confirmed fact, and that happened. So we have another issue. These toasted cars, I think it was 1,400 cars up to a half a mile away. Some of them look like they've been burned. Some of them looks like part of the car has been burned and part of it's pristine and a half a mile away.
And those are the 1,400 is the number where there's still enough left to count it as a vehicle. You know, we don't know how many of those were totally justified. There's some that were described as half there and half gone, just missing.
Well, first of all, to be a half a mile away, give me a break, folks. This is logic again. I mean, that's a long ways away to be affected by the building coming down, isn't it?
Yeah, spontaneous combustion it appeared to be, but then it really wasn't like real fire. And also, it didn't burn people.
That's an astounding part, too. I don't understand that part. That's an astounding part, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it rolled up West Broadway, past Building 7, up West Broadway, and every vehicle on the street was toasted. That's my generic term for it, because we don't know exactly what it was, so that's a word that's not really defined. I use it as in its history, it's toast. So these cars were destroyed somehow. They look kind of like they're cooked, but then they're really not, because the plastic on molding inside wasn't melted. And none of the paper around them was burned. And neither were the people.
But the metal was gone, though, right?
Yeah, and different types of material were affected more than other types. Like the door handles and door latches were among the first things to go easily. And you see a lot of popped open trunk lids because the door latches were just gone, as well as the little screws that hold on license plates and hold on the side fittings like the reflectors and so forth. Those all went away. So it looks like somebody took out all those fittings.
Well, that's astounding, too, because I know there's a police car and several others. It's absolutely astounding, because if you would think if it was any sort of an explosive, any sort of a fire, when you do a car, it all goes together. I mean, there are some pictures of where all of a sudden there's part of the car is, as you say, toasted, and then all of a sudden the rest of it's pristine, just sitting there, like nothing happened.
Like engine blocks. You see the rest of the car there, the hood is partly eaten out, but there's no engine block inside.
Yeah. Wow. Hold that thought. We're going to break here. We'll be back in just a minute. Got to pay some bills. Okay. Well, we're back here from break. We're still trying to get John Hutchinson on. Tesla and what he's done. His line is busy for some reason here, so must be something going on. But I have Dr. Judy Wood here. I'm very honored to have her back again. And we're talking about 911. And the dustification, 80% of the building, poof, dust, gone. That ought to shock somebody right there. And then we were just talking, and got any more comments about just toasted cars. And how could that, what are all the things that happen with the automobiles and fire engines?
And it didn't burn other things. The paper isn't burned around it, neither are the people. As we all saw, this dust cloud rolled out, rolled over the people, it just left them covered with dust.
That's just astounding.
So it wasn't hot either.
Yeah, I saw some pictures where there was, looks like something's glowing, but there's paper laying there right there.
and the firefighter walking right through it.
What do you attribute? Any ideas, any comments on that?
Well, and I also noticed this upside-down cars that are in pristine condition, parked right in front of, parked upside down, right in front of vehicles that are toasted. And that was kind of bizarre, as well as round holes in window glass. I accumulated a long list of these weird, anomalous material events, and then I happened upon the work of John Hutchison, and it was just a real eye-opening experience. It was just about 2.5 years ago, and because there's a one-to-one correspondence with each of the phenomena. That John had produced a photo of stuff he'd done in his lab, and I could recognize every one of the same phenomena. It was mind-boggling.
Have you met John personally?
Yes, I have, and I've seen his current lab, if you call it that, as well as a lot of his samples.
Have you seen some of the anomalies, or whatever word we want to put to it?
Yes, and I even discovered more anomalies than he realized were there, too. I like to play around with things and see what it does in response to this, that, and the other. He had a solid bar of stainless steel. It's about 2 or 3 inches in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
That was bent in the middle where it had been affected by his gizmo, and it was kind of cruddied up and corroded. I got a magnet out, and wouldn't stick to the ends of the sample, but it would stick to the middle where it had been affected. And that was pretty interesting. Why would it make it, it obviously changed the material properties then.
Absolutely. Wow.
Because magnets aren't attracted to some types of this particular type of stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
Until after it was affected.
So something that he did, that he was doing with his experiments, had changed the internal metal properties of the steel. Stainless steel?
Yes. Yes.
Did you see any levitation issues or anything like that when you were there?
Yeah, and that's not all that surprising. One thing that's interesting is he said he gets either lift or disruption, or somebody else had written that up in an article. And now I understand why you get lift or disruption. Think of a strong magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
Around like a soda can. There's a lot of these examples around the internet. I think there's University of Wisconsin puts on demonstrations of this. And if the can is in the middle of the field, it gets disrupted. It gets shredded or collapses in and gets distorted.
Mm-hmm.
If it's near the edge of the field, it goes flying across the room.
Really?
So now let's apply that to the World Trade Center. If you have patches of weird field effects, I'm not saying necessarily pure magnetic field, but just different types of energy fields, you could get something getting flipped or tossed next to something that's getting disrupted and torn apart.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the strength of the field, the direction of the field, and how it is being applied.
So that would have bearing on these cars. Some are flipped upside down, some are toasted.
And notice the ones that are flipped upside down, the underside of them looks like they came off the showroom floor. They're not toasted.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this one particular one that's parked in front of an SUV that looks kind of shriveled inward. Kind of shrunken in on the front end and toasted. And actually, when I first contacted John Hutchison, I sent him that picture saying, does your neighborhood ever get to looking like this? Because people have written about, he said that he gets spurious effects on his neighbors.
Uh-huh.
Pictures coming off the wall and car alarms going off.
Oh, I bet he's a real hit.
Yeah. Actually, I discovered his neighbors, really take pride in living near him.
Well, it'd be an exciting thing. You might be sitting there and watch the picture go floating across the room.
Right, exactly.
TV levitates. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, we're back for a break here, and been talking with Dr. Judy Wood here on 911 and some of the many things we're going to talk about that are facts. And I'm glad here, I think, John Hutchison, scientist out of Canada. You just joined us? Are you there, John?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad I'm glad to have you aboard. I'm very honored to have you on board here. And maybe you could tell us just briefly what you, I guess some of your background, some of the problems if you want. What I'd really like to get into is how you got involved with trying to demonstrate some of these things of Tesla and what you've been able to demonstrate.
Oh, over the years, the anti-gravity effects and the metal distortion effects have been demonstrated to U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command in 1983, as well as Canadian Directorship of Scientific Technical Intelligence Agency, McDonnell Douglas Aerospace Corporation, Lockheed Martin. And after a lot of that stuff, I got involved in demonstrating it to mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to Europe, the lab was seized by the Canadian government and a fence built around it. All of that actually unto itself made mainstream media. And then I rebuilt it in around 1999 approximately and started demonstrating it to, again, mainstream news media and Discovery Channel Network, Fox, and CNN and that. And it is Tesla-type technology, which I converted down to a smaller kind of system by using vacuum tube technology, which gave me more room to work with, more precision, and also more control for the effects I produce, which are rather dynamic and actually got the attention of the city I'm in, New Westminster, British Columbia's mayor and group there, who basically said it's not zoned for levitation. They were getting many complaints into City Hall, and they called in the fire marshal and that too. Basically, to wanting to remove everything, but I refused with threats of lawsuits and civil liberties and violations and that, and they backed down, and we agreed to certain things like make a walkway through the place, so that's what we did do. Back in 2008, actually.
And you're still able to experiment and do things, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, could you expand on, say, levitation is one, and the distortion of metals, or also issues of where maybe things, metal or things have vanished or whatever?
Well, of course. We've had many things vanish, and metals, large metal pieces will suddenly go like into a jelly or a very soft configuration and split apart and fall apart. The anti-gravity effects it'll lift up any object of any weight, apparently, from what I have researched out and shown to many different folks. It's been written up in many journals and that, but it's all away from the machinery, and there's no connections underneath or above what they call the target areas. This all happens at a distance away from the machine, so it falls in the area of directed energy research, which was a great interest in 1983 to the U.S. Pentagon group in Star Wars. So that's when they hired a team.
What sort of metals have you worked with that you've had these results with?
Oh, heavy bars of steel, aluminum, copper, brass, all kinds of different configurations of different metals and alloys.
And they actually turn to jelly. Do they stay in jelly when you were going to get to how you got them there? Do they go back to what they were, or do they?
No,
take
they
on
actually
a new shape, a new force, new characteristics or properties.
No, after the effects happen, they remain like that, which is a great interest to metallurgists and scientists, which analyze these samples and write up reports on them. There was just recently some publications on that, and also in a book by George Hathaway called Mindbenders, with forewords from Colonel John Alexander and other folks in regards to these unusual effects. And a lot of samples have been analyzed by other countries, of course. Japan and Germany, Austria, I believe Switzerland as well.
What is the results then of take some metal that you've done with? You start off with steel or copper or brass or something. What aluminum? What's the result when they come back on the properties?
The properties of them have drastically changed, and also they indicate unknown alloys have been made out of parts of the metal. And if you do electron scanning microscope, then you find that there's pure deposits of other metals right inside the material.
So you would start off with aluminum, and then when they would analyze it, it would come back, and there's an alloy and other metals properties present?
Oh, yeah, all kinds of different metal properties. So they take the metal samples, run it through a scanning electron microscope, X-ray diffraction analysis, and fluorescent analysis, and write up quite lengthy reports, which I have some of them, and my partner, George Hathaway, has others, as well as the other teams have their reports. And it's quite intriguing stuff, I must say.
Now, when you're doing this, you're like a metal. Do you have to suspend it, or does it have to set on a certain type of non-metal something that's not affected, or how do you go about accomplishing that?
Actually, we used to use ordinary milk crates with plywood on top. The reason for that is you can adjust the height quite quickly. They're very light. We have these large metal pieces sitting on plywood and cameras on them, and then you can see them starting to fall apart or disintegrate or go into another formation.
I think it's interesting. I've seen some of the videos where there's a steel bar that's like doing sit-ups. You know, half is horizontal, the other half is just like sitting up, and then down and up and down.
Well, those are really cool. Yeah, there's some good video on those samples. And some of them are very active stainless steel bars that do that. Other ones can be a block of iron that just sort of curls up and falls over. And I have several barrels of these metal samples, as well as George Hathaway in Toronto. I think Colonel Alexander has a bunch, and Prince Hans Adam Liechtenstein has a few for his private collection. And I've given a lot of them away, too, which I guess I shouldn't have done. I didn't realize they'd be valuable one day, but I gave them off to friends in Hollywood land just for the heck of it. But all in all, it's a huge amount of metal samples.
Now, this is Tesla's type. Now, what sort of issues are you using? Your electromagnetic different type of waves, and this is out of Tesla's type of research, right?
Well, I think it is out of it because I use a different combination of radio waves along with threshold high voltage and electrostatic operators. And I only use weak magnetic fields to steer the electrostatic around to cause it to conform in certain patterns. Now, mind you, this is a purely accidental discovery I made. And I had a real problem in trying to replicate it in the early years. And I didn't think it was important, but it leaked out into the scientific community, and they started coming down with other scientists and asking for demonstrations, which I did give, and that brought in yet more scientists and led into the Star Wars program and the demonstration for that group, or INSCUM. Major General Stubbledeen at the time was head of that. Those rather adventurous times, I must say.
Well, it sounds astounding. I mean, I'm not a drinking man, but if I watched this, I'd probably want to make darn sure that I was tested, that I wasn't inebriated or something.
Well, they gave the first public news at 6 demonstration for CTV News, News at 6. And that was a big success, actually. That was 1985, if you can believe that, long ago. That was a great demonstration, that one. Then they gave a few others to the other medias in competition with CTV News.
Now, does this just seem to affect metals, or what other things does it affect that you've been able to demonstrate with?
Well, it will take wood and rip it apart on a rare occasion. It affects water by throwing it in the air. It produces strange lighting effects in midair. Produces magnetic monopoles, large-scale type.
I'm sorry, what was the last thing you just said?
Large magnetic monopoles.
Okay.
Meaning that if you break a bar magnet, normally you would have north-south, but in this particular case, it was all going in the same direction, or actually reversed. And under analysis, George Hathaway and Tom Bearden then called it large-scale magnetic monopoles. Written up in Tom Bearden's book, actually. I can't remember the name of the book. That was so well ago, but also written up in by George Hathaway and published on video by George on his epic six-hour-long video presentation for 1993, made for Prince Hans Adam Liechtenstein for funding. And that, I believe, is on the internet, the whole full length of it, I think. I mean, you go Google. You kind of, it's kind of funny when people point things out about yourself on the internet.
we'll say that the treatment of animals, folks, need to close their ears right now, but have you had any experiences this with any small animals or bugs or anything like that that either got there by accident or whatever? Does it seem to affect them? Or
no, no animals. The only incident I had was when Tom Sky was filming. He got hit by it, and the results of all that was much later when he returned to Los Angeles. He went through something which I don't fully understand, and was interviewed by a scientist friend of mine, Ken Shoulders, who attributed maybe to EVOs, electron volt operators. And Tom Sky recovered quite well, but that was quite an incident. And that was the same time that New Westminster felt they were hit by something that made them suddenly ill, according to emails I got. And that's when the mayor of New Westminster, shortly after that, quite rather on my case, and the fire marshal. So,
there is also that person from, what was it, Discovery Channel filming, where the hair on their back of their neck went up or something like that?
Oh, that was Nancy O'Donnelly of National Geographic TV and Film.
Hmm.
February 24th, 2006, when they're filming there, her hair started levitating. Everybody stopped filming and said, "Are we going to be okay?" I said, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's only static." I downplayed these things sometimes in case of emergency like that. You don't want a whole film crew just walking away.
How close to these experiments are you when you're doing? Do you sit behind any sort of a shielding, or what's the proximity when you're doing something like this?
Oh, not a good thing. It's in an apartment. totally converted re-engineered apartment, and there's a wall separating me, plus a lot of machinery as a shield. And let's see, it's walls are solid rack cabinets, a machinery. So there's a lot of shielding, and however, that unfortunately does not work because it affects other tenants in the building who then go to the news media and talk about their experiences. And sometimes the police arrive and have to take the tenant away because he's screaming and yelling that things are floating in his apartment. He's got film crews down there, and they, you know, the cops come in and look at this guy and think he's maybe crazy. Take him in to the hospital.
He's seeing his TV floating across the room, huh?
Yeah, well, I think it was a TV set. It literally was a television set. And that was when I was doing work with Griffin Film Productions in working on Beyond Invention, where we had a toy UFO float around in the room on a chain, and the effects must have gone upstairs and affected his television set. So,
well, you're
another incident.
An exciting life, not knowing what's going to happen when you're sitting there, huh?
Oh, yes. I mean, even when we were doing the McDonnell Douglas testing, we had a water main explode on the street outside, as well as other crazy things happened, but none of us were affected. And the report was not classified, but downgraded to what they call psychokinetics. So they get away by doing that so they can release the report in video. But with U.S. Army intelligence, of course, it's called classified, and we don't have the report anymore business. The same with the Canadian government. They say, oh, no, I mean, the videos are not around anymore. Same attitude problem. I mean, there's no harm in giving me copies of the videos from both governments, but that never occurred. It would simply be fun to see them and see what happened.
Censoring.
Reminds me of Sergeant Schultz, I see nothing.
Yeah, basically, it's like, can I have the videos? Can I get copies of the videos? And I get letters back saying, oh, well, it didn't turn out, or other excuses. And I suggested to George Hathaway to try and get those videos from the Canadian government, but he's very quiet on that issue.
Okay, I hear the music. This is, I'll tell you what, like I say, I've got a little bit of Carolinas. I think I might strengthen it here in my coffee. We'll be back in a minute. Stay tuned. Back for a break here, and I'm honored today to have Dr. Judy Wood and John Hutchison today's guests. John, I got all kinds of questions for both of you here, but John, the magnetic, have you seen any effects on changing a magnet or a magnetic field in what you've been working on?
A magnetic field? I actually use small, what they call traveling wave tube, variable magnetic fields, which are very weak, to steer the electrostatic energy within the target area. Which I don't know why, because the effects happen like miles away sometimes. But I'm sticking and staying to the machinery as it is and what I created years ago without deviating away too much from that because it doesn't seem to work. But I'm wondering about magnetics.
You mean something's happened miles away when you're working? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, actually, that was a friend of mine in the 80s, actually found activity about a mile and a half away. Los Alamos National Laboratories found activity about 300 feet away in their testing for the Star Wars program.
And that activity was what?
They just said, we don't know what it is. That was John Rinka of Los Alamos National Laboratories. So in those days, there was a four-month program, and the team had many different test instruments, even checking with Geiger counters for scalar wave activity in the ground. So there was a lot of different test instruments and specialized scientists involved in that demonstration. Unlike the Canadians, who just came in with a lot of cameras and filmed everything for one day and took off, but with a few metal samples, too.
So what did they actually see, like 300 feet away? Is this something visual, or it changed something, the properties of something, or...?
It seemed to be visual, from what John Rink said. He was outside the building that was given to us, Ferris Technologies at the time. And he says, I don't know what it is, but I picked it up also on my oscilloscope, portable oscilloscope at the time. And our effects were broad-ranged, meaning that they would smash mirrors, throw things around in the buildings next door, because this is a huge warehouse that was the U.S. government got for us to run stuff in Canada, by the way, for a four-month test run.
Well, you're familiar with the Dr. Judy Woods and all of the... you guys have definitely met and talked. Do you have any comments about... I know, like, in the magnetometer in Alaska...
I think that's fantastic.
Any comments about that? Because that happened up in Alaska, and we're a long ways away from New York. Not far enough, but we're out there.
Oh, that's that is really amazing stuff. That would indicate a huge disturbance in the geomagnetic field of the Earth at the time, which would indicate something going on. For sure, something on a huge magnitude. Now, whether HARP is able to do that, I honestly don't know. I know that they can... It's been pointed out by an R&D innovator years ago that HARP could actually go through the ionosphere into the Van Allen belt and draw down, like a Ben Franklin effect, a giant massive energy with...
Well, that's an astounding thing to happen at the same time, clear in Alaska. A long way, we're a long ways away, and to have the magnetometers up here change the magnetic field affected by buildings ceasing to exist. I don't know what the word... It sure didn't collapse, that's for darn sure.
And it started wandering off of its average value about 20 minutes before the first tower got its hold. And at the exact moment the first tower got its hold, the trend reversed.
Really? I didn't get that far. Hold on, we're going to be back in a minute. We've got one more hour of this. I hope you folks are sitting down. I'm going to strengthen my Carolinas. I'm really... Well, we're back here, and we've got two amazing guests on today, Dr. Judy Wood. On 911 facts and issues, she's writing a book. She took a case clear to the Supreme Court of the United States trying to get this addressed, and of course the fix is in. And John Hutchinson has been demonstrating what has been labeled the Hutchinson effect, and getting some astounding information out here. And we've got some callers. We're going to try taking some callers, but we're looking for some short, concise questions, not particularly... we don't want a long view. We just need some questions for the guest, and address what your question is, and then we'll get through this, because we got a lot more things I'd like to get out here while we've got two people of this caliber on. Allison in California, you got a question? Allison? Okay, Eddie in Ohio, you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. What's your question?
My question is, if he has produced a magnetic monopole, isn't he in fact contradicting Gauss's law for magnetism, quantum field theory of light, and Maxwell's equations? Thank you. I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay, I'm not sure I understood the question. I don't really want to answer that.
I didn't quite understand him. It was kind of low. But going into something, Maxwell equations and something about the magnetic field.
Okay.
I think. I mean, sorry. It was very low.
Okay, but, well, let's just go on to the next caller. Guy in Arkansas. You have a question for either one of the guests?
Yes. Thank you. Another great informative show, Ralph. Listen, this question is more to Dr. Wood. And I want to thank Mr. Hutchinson for his, I saw some of his videos, incredible stuff. what I would term is exotic destructive technology. You know, Dr. Wood, I'm very curious about all of these vehicles that were half incinerated and just basically affected. You know, we're talking about people's private property here. What happened to all those vehicles? Were they scooped up with the rest of the crud and thrown and brought over to China? And this is part of evidence. What happened to these people's vehicles? Do we have any of that evidence around that we can study? And I'll take your comments off air. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know of any evidence that anything was shipped to China. That is a story that I've heard, but there's no evidence to that. I have the feeling it was brought about as an explanation for why there was no material much still left. But these are people's private vehicles. The police department and the fire department lost a tremendous number of vehicles, a huge number. I don't know what it is, but it was a project quoted. There was destruction of private property.
Do you know any analysis, where they examined the properties of any of the metal, of any of these were toasted?
No, and they removed them very quickly. There was, I'll wait till after the break.
Okay, great. Well, here's the music. We're going to pay some bills, and stay tuned. Yep. We've got a lot more information coming. Okay, we're back here, and Dr. Wood, go ahead and finish your thought, and the other caller, Eddie, is going to ask his question again. Go ahead, Dr. Wood.
As for the material properties, and you can tell looking at them, you don't need to, subpoena somebody or whatever. We know who has the evidence, and we can see it. It was on display, actually, in the mystery port. I say the material looks more like, you know, cake batter or a taco or rolled up carpet. This does not look like material from a collapse of a building. I think everyone has seen the, just about everyone has seen the bent horseshoe shape. That's not from a collapse. You don't get a U-shaped bend, smooth bend in steel. You don't even get it in steel from heating it. There's no, you know, buckling or it apparently turned to jelly, reshaped and then resolidified. No cracking.
And that's something that John, you've basically demonstrated as bending steel and those sorts of things.
And steel that bends into a tight U, heavy bars of it, without any kind of disruption, really, of cracking or breaking. That's appeared in many different samples that I have, as well as George Hathaway have, which means it was like jelly and just bent that way or formed into a whole different configuration of weird-looking stuff.
So there's a direct correlation of what you've demonstrated and direct evidence that's in 911.
It's highly possible. It's quite, you know, there's similarities even when I watch the video of the central core of the buildings just simply vaporizing. I've never seen anything like that, only in small test samples where the end part of a steel bar will go into vapor or smoke. But I mean, when you look at the central core of these buildings, it's just like it vaporized. I don't understand it.
It turned to dust. And then
the whole thing, the whole central core turned to dust, and there is video evidence of that. I mean, that doesn't make sense. You'd think there'd be something left of the buildings, even if they collapsed the central core or part of it still standing, but it all just turned into a pile of junk, unfortunately.
But, John, you've got some evidence of where the ends of steel or something, so I don't know, the word vaporize, testify, or are missing, or whatever the word we should use there?
In my experiments?
Yes.
Yes, I do. There are some samples that Hathaway has analyzed that shows the actual piece or the end of it turning into vapor, and I've seen it. along with Alex Pizarro at the time, and he has the bar in Toronto, and he has analyzed it a long time ago.
It's just gone, right?
It just vanished into funny-looking dust. It was one of the first, actually put it on YouTube, but George was talking about it. And a few other strange things like that.
Okay, let me interrupt the thought here just a second here. We'll let this caller come in. If you got a real quick question, restate it again so we can get back to, we've got a lot of things to cover yet. Your call, Eddie, you want to restate your question again?
Oh, yeah. Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
My question was real simple, okay? He said that he had created some process whereby he was able to produce a magnetic monopole. Now, magnetic fields normally come in pairs, north and south. And it is my understanding that Gauss's law for magnetism forbids the existence of the magnetic monopole. And I was wondering what his views were on the subject. As for that thing turning to dust, hey, that is easy. Magnetic resonance. That was my my question. You know, the magnetic monopole, how does it exist? How can it exist? And I'll just hang up again and listen. Thank you for your time.
I guess I'll answer that. It was actually a file, a large file, that broke into many segments. And normally when you do that, you can put the segments together again and they pull each other together because it turned out to be magnetic. And in this particular case, what happens is that the file pushes all the segments apart. And this was brought to George Hathaway's attention along with his team, and they referred to it as a large-scale magnetic monopole. This is a very loose term, actually, in describing this, but that's what they described. And as well as Tom Bearden wrote it up in one of his books on how scalar waves can actually do this kind of thing to magnetic I don't think the file was magnetic. I don't remember it as being magnetic. Just after the shattered to pieces, it turned magnetic. Which in those days, I thought, I'll let George handle it and analyze it, which he did do.
And what did he come up with?
Just basically what I mentioned, large-scale magnetic monopoles.
What happens if you put a magnet in there? Does it... Can you actually demagnetize it, or is there any...
Oh, just a minute. I did some interesting experiments with ferrule fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing levitated into a round ball with things pointing out of it. And luckily, I have a few photos of that strange experiment. I mean, I've done so many crazy experiments for different people over a long period of time. it's just so many of them that I have to remember.
Okay, so what actually happened? I'm not quite understanding on a magnet.
Okay, this is a magnetic material called ferrule fluid.
Yes.
And I did a controlled experiment with it not too long ago.
It's a liquid.
Yes.
It's just a liquid, yeah. This liquid stood up and stuck out its like little prongs all around it in a ball. And it was in a container and managed to get a few photographs of it. I think video of it also somewhere laying around, but it was rather a strange-looking type of experiment. And that was one I did alone. I didn't have a film crew with me, but I was preparing for a film crew arrival. I was just goofing around with some of those crazy tests, but
playing with your toys.
Playing with my toys.
A leading question that you may not want to answer. I don't know. Has this definitely got any correlation to what is known as free energy?
Oh, I'm working on free energy, on zero-point energy, actually, and the team here in Minnesota has developed free energy power cells ready for market. We just got some crazy investors and strange Hollywood types that keep breaking up the deals. And zero-point energy, actually, if people want a reference, they can Google search out Dr. Franklin E. Mead, and look for Meade's Zero Point Energy device, and it'll come up on the internet. And I've been doing this since 1993 and had some very successful demonstrations in Japan, as well as other demonstrations to large groups of people in media. I left it alone for a while. Then when I arrived in central USA here, then a group was quite interested and brought it out into a format ready for a factory.
Okay, and yeah, Dr. Just looking. Franklin, and what was the last name?
I'm sorry?
What was the last name, Dr. Franklin?
E. Mead. M-E-A-D-E. Mm-hmm. And the reason I mentioned him, because the U.S. Patent Office accepted his patent. Normally, they don't accept patents on anything related to free energy and perpetual motion devices, but this was accepted, making it a landmark case. And I believe some years ago when I was looking up how it was doing his device, I think IBM bought up all the patent rights to it. It'd be similar to the discovery of the anti-aging enzyme telomerase, and that made world-breaking news in 1997. The Duron Corporation in Texas bought up all the patent applications for that, meaning that they thought it was extremely important, and now they have some products out. And I haven't heard any new things from the IBM people on what they're planning on doing, but probably a free energy running computing system. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the black community, black ops community, that I get leaks from different friends in that industry. And they talk about free energy about 10 years ahead of anything out there.
So it's actually here if we can just get it out to the people then.
That's what we're planning on doing here in Minnesota, get it up to the people.
Use it as a form of... And all these other folks are just overjoyed.
use it as a form of currency, too. Because there's a lot of things happening in the United States, I gather, from bits and pieces here, haven't it? Well, it's kind of on the brink of a major problem.
I can tell you something that's definitely in demand. If you can figure out a way to turn any brass or aluminum into gold, boy, the government is sure in need of something.
Well, that would be fun to do, except I keep missing the mark and it turns into some other unknown material, but not gold or platinum. I wish you could do that. That would be really cool.
Now, when you said that you've taken some of these metals and get alloys, have you got... actually had one metal, like aluminum, end up with iron, or, you know, a complete different metal, or just some...
Oh, totally different. With silicon, all different kinds of different ratios of materials, silicon, copper, and iron, and all sorts of weird combinations. The Max Planck Institute of Germany did the most exhaustive tests on those samples.
Wow, hold that thought back in a minute. Stay tuned. Back for a break here, and I got Dr. Judy Wood and John Hutchinson out of Canada, and let me make sure this. I understand this. That's like conclusive that you've demonstrated you could take like aluminum, and when you get through with some of the experiments, you can find other metals in the aluminum.
Find all kinds of different metals in these samples in pure condition.
So you have aluminum, and then when you get through, you've got maybe aluminum and iron or aluminum and something else?
It's small deposits of different metals, copper, iron. It's been, these things have been extensively analyzed. And sometimes you get blocks of wood inside the samples, which I have, and other pieces of metal inside. The metal just sort of floated in. Because sometimes when we're running a test, we'll put a metal sample on top of a metal sample and on a rare occasion, they'll just bond together. In one case, it was a piece of block of wood which got inside the aluminum several times. Actually, George Hathaway has samples like that, and I have samples, and the Max Planck Institute has samples like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got a couple of callers here, and then I want to get to the other part of the correlation between what you've been able to demonstrate and 911, because that's an important issue with what Dr. Woods has been working on. Let's take a couple of callers here. Roger in Indiana, you got a question?
Yes, I do. Well, one question is, I have a few questions. One, there was in 87 that I was watching the Discovery, or, you know, I was reading the Discovery magazine a lot, and there was a gentleman that came up with something that was a perpetual machine. And what it was is, it looked like a big alternator, and it was like 6 foot round, and he said, everyone home can have this. And he, I would believe it was part of Tesla's kind of concept of the polarity of the Earth. It looked like an alternator. You could tilt it anywhere on the Earth at your home, and it would receive the polarity of the Earth, and it would start spinning and create energy. And I was wondering, are you that guy? He was looking at a patent for it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thanks for your question.
That sounds like there's in Switzerland a generator that runs off the environment. For decades, as well as maybe what this gentleman was referring to, something that appeared in for use in farm work or isolated areas, probably built by Delco Remy, which built incredible motors and generators at that time. And possibly it did work off of the Earth's geomagnetic field, maybe with the help of batteries, but I don't know of that particular device he's referring to, but I've read similar type case files on that in Popular Science, Popular Mechanics.
Okay, it did exist. Okay, Lark in Texas, you have a question for either one of the guests?
Well, I want to thank you, Ralph, for having your two guests on. This is remarkable information. If we have anti-aging, and if we have perpetual motion and or free energy, we don't need hierarchical structures anymore to rule us. And I think that perhaps that's what the fear is for those that are ruling us, quote-unquote. My specific question, and then I'll also hang up, is in regards to what you said earlier, Mr. Hutchison, regarding anti-aging and the Duron Corporation, something to do with enzymes, I believe?
That's right, telomerase enzyme, and there's a product out now. Oh, I can never pronounce it, astragalus, something, or, it's, no, I sound like an idiot, I can never pronounce the word. But anyway, it's $9,000 per kilogram, it's already on the market, and if you go to my blogger, I put a lot of advertising up on it. And it's interesting to note, too, that since Obama put out the healthcare business, that also I have a congressman friend who also put out, in 1998, through Congress, the American Alternative Foundation for Health, and I'm surprised that maybe, you know, that Congress should have put out a handbook on alternative health and going into all these different interesting aspects of promoting your own health and well-being. And Berkeley Bedell, actually, his name, and Orrin Hatch got involved in it, and
there?
Bill Clinton signed it into public law. But, you know, to teach the people how to heal themselves would be kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And there's cool websites around.
Kevin in Australia, do you have a question? Kevin, are you there?
To 9/11 and probably directed towards Dr. Wood. Now, when I saw the video of the 9/11, we're talking about the Twin Towers now, what I saw was a massive pressure wave which started from the top and kind of worked its way down to the bottom, and when the wave had done its business, it came down at roughly the speed of gravity, and there was basically, the building had pretty much disappeared. Now, if that was a some kind of an energy beam, which, you know, I'm very skeptical with things like that, I'm a mechanical engineer, but nevertheless, if that is what it was, then how would that there must be some mechanism to direct it, to be able to hit on the target. Surely that would be quite a difficult act to generate. Now, am I hearing music?
Okay,
is there a break coming?
We got your question here. Hold on a minute. We got to go to break. We'll be back in a minute. We've got a heartbreak here. Is your question, are you asking if there's some sort of a ray or something? Is that your question?
Well, I don't know that, I don't think there would be a ray. The only way I could see that working is if they converted the building into some kind of an aerial.
No one's saying that there was a ray.
I'm not saying that there was either.
Well, that's why we talked about it.
I think we've gotten off track here. Let's go up to the next caller here, because we want to stick to the facts here of what evidence has produced here so far. So, Ron in Texas, you have a question? Ron? Yes. Are you there? You have a question? Hello, Ron. I guess not. You messed up.
Let me add something at this point. There's a lot of incorrect information floating around that may give people the wrong idea. I have never, ever presented radiation in space or space beams or whatever the derogatory terms used. I've only looked at the evidence, and, you know, the evidence does not support any idea of a space beam. It correlates very strongly, the evidence does, with the Hutchinson effect, and I don't think John uses space beams either. So it's sort of irrelevant to talk about, but still people are accidentally caught up in that misconception.
Okay, I got one quick question, and I want you to do the correlation. Irwin, a hurricane, was off of New York, which nobody seemed to want to acknowledge. That could be a source of something that might have significance in a directed energy weapon. Is that possible?
Yes. John uses a Tesla coil or Van de Graaff generator or something to produce a static field. Hurricanes produce static fields. If you look at their structure, they look like a supersized Tesla coil. And there are people who talk about feeling the effects of a storm coming. Ionizes the air sometimes. There's a different chemical atmosphere. And in addition, the three airports surrounding Manhattan that day recorded thunder. So we have evidence of field effects from that hurricane.
So that would be one of the requirements of a possible Hutchinson-type effect, the hurricane that supplied. Got two quick callers, and then I want to get in. I don't want to spend much time on the caller, because I want Dr. Wood to correlate these two between what John Hutchinson has demonstrated and what F-911. Ron in Texas, you got a question?
Yes, I do. Can you hear me this time, Ralph?
Yes, I can. What's your
question? All right. John, this is Ron in Texas. I got to speak to you about 2 years ago.
Oops.
Asking if you had ever had a chance to use any audio manipulation of the frequencies you were working with.
I didn't get the first part after the sentence was cut off. Could you repeat, please?
Is John Hutchinson there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, John, this is Ron in Texas. Ron Miller, I got to speak to you a couple of years ago on another radio show asking if you had ever tried helping manipulate your frequencies by using any ELF or ultra-high frequencies to control the manipulation.
Well, I do use ultra-high frequencies and ELF frequencies. In that combination of waves and widths and frequencies I use.
Have you ever run across Hans Jenny and the Cybermatics, where they were back in 1986 using sound on matter?
Interesting. I used to play around with sound through barium titanate cylinders.
Well, the interesting thing I thought that I found in their documentary I saw was that if they were using as many as three or four sound generators, they were not creating a three-dimensional effect, but when they added a fifth one, they could then create a three-dimensional effect.
Interesting stuff. I've heard of it.
Okay, well, I'll let you go. I'll listen and see what else happens. Thanks.
Pleasure, sir.
Got a question for either one of the guests?
Yes, hello. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, fine.
Hi, Ralph. This is an amazing show, as usual. You're doing a great job. The only reason that I called in is because currently, while we're speaking, 6.9 earthquakes are rocking Southern California, causing massive damages in San Diego and L.A., I believe. And my question was for both of your guests. I believe for a long time that 9/11 was the first full-scale, demonstration. And I was wondering if they believe that these kinds of systems might be being used for earthquakes.
Okay, thanks for your question. Either of you want to comment?
I would like to.
Go ahead, John.
Oh, sorry. I've been following it since I was an iReporter for CNN until I posted my Carla profile. It was deleted, but I was following the Haiti earthquake quite a bit. Then I've been following that, like, I sensed that it's going to happen again. It did with Chile. Then all up and down the coast. So what, in regards to what, I don't know yet, but there's the earthquake activity is extremely high every day. And I'm wondering what's going on, and maybe it's just simply related to the sun, which is supposed to go into a unique, rather solar storm in 2012, which might wipe out the entire grids of power and the satellite system. So they say. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of kind of like the 2000 Y2K thing, but... Sorry, Judy.
No, it's okay. I think there's a lot of talk about what things might happen, and people pretty soon start perceiving things to match it instead of what is really there. But one thing we do know is, you get a big rubble pile, and one item kind of scoots in the pile, then the pile readjusts and scoots here and scoots there, and you get a lot of like aftershocks. So if there's any kind of earthquake action going on, the chances are there'll be additional ones that will continue. And after all, isn't the West Coast sort of, earthquake alley?
Oh, absolutely. I've been through a few of them myself, Judy.
What?
I've been through a few earthquakes on the West Coast. earthquake alley.
What did you say, John? I lost you.
I'm sorry,
what did you say, John? Please repeat.
Oh, no, I'm saying that the West Coast is like Earthquake Alley. I've been through a few earthquakes myself out there.
Yeah, it's sort of like what goes on, and it's also reasonable that when one goes, it's going to maybe trigger another one, which triggers another one. And volcanoes do that as well. That you get big, massive amounts of energy moving around, it's bound to pop things loose here and there.
Well,
I would agree.
I want to tie in how 911 to what John has done. But first of all, so we don't forget this, John, do you have a web page, a website, or anything, DVDs or anything that you'd like to put out on the air, or how to get a hold of you?
Well, actually, I have a crazy YouTube account. It's John K. Hutchison 2008, and I have a MySpace profile. It's www.myspace.com/John.
Is that cutting out, or is that...
No, I don't hear anything. John, are you still there?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Oh, no. I got to 2008. Did you stop there?
No. I was going into www.myspace.com. John K. Hutchison is another site I have. And then there's the main site that Andrew put up. It's www.thehutchisoneffect.com.
Okay.
But
do you
for
have
real,
any DVDs or any books or anything? Or
no, everybody else published the books. No, I don't have anything to sell.
Okay, Dr. Wood, you're going to give some sites out, and before I forget that, and then we'll get on with tying this together.
Yeah, drjudywood.com. That's DrJudywood, all one word, drjudywood.com is my site. And if you put /WTC at the end, it takes you to an overview page, kind of a cliff notes of various phenomena. From my front page, there's a pretty long, extensive series showing the correlation between the Hutchison effect and what we saw happen on 9-1-1. John's site, I think, I hope it has links to his other ones on it too, but it's a great site to introduce the Hutchison effect, thehutchisoneffect.com, all one word. So there you go.
Now, could you tie in, what I'd like to see is what you saw from John or you two talking, what did you see in 9-1-1 that led you to believe this Hutchison effect was there?
Well, I noticed that what I saw didn't make sense, and it looked like a sweater unraveling. It didn't look like a building collapsing at all. But I had never heard of directed energy weapons before or the Hutchison effect. I was totally naive to any of that. But I started looking at the evidence, which is my area, and I feel that I believe that the evidence will tell you exactly what happened if you listen to it carefully enough. So I began just looking at the evidence, gathering what evidence I could see, which the photographic evidence is fairly extensive. And sure enough, it starts coming together. But the aha moment for me was when I was looking at this picture of the tipping top of Tower 2, where the building just, you know, looked like the molecules in the building suddenly began to repel each other instead of attract each other. I looked up on the website, was thinking of the Casimir forces, and then I happened to find this amazing article, and it was on John Hutchison's blog, and it which took me to seeing the pictures on his blog, which was, you know, my gosh, where did these pictures come from? It looks like it came from 9/11. And I noticed that this is after I had tabulated all of the various phenomena that I had noticed. And I saw every one of those phenomena in his images on a much smaller scale, of course.
So you saw this justification. You saw steel being bent. Large beams being bent as it is impossible by heating.
Correct. And lift or disruption was another issue. Again, the toasted cars either were toasted or they were flipped.
Mm-hmm.
The toasted cars weren't flipped. So it's lift
just,
or disruption.
That's one of the many. First of all, 80% of the building is just missing, folks. I mean, that's an astounding thing. This takes all this thermite, nanothermite, and all this other nonsense and throws it out the window. And then how do cars a half a mile away have these things happen? And then you're talking here about part of a car is toasted and part of it's not.
And also, the effects were ongoing. The fuming, I call it, fuming that was coming up from the ground, we don't know what it was. They told us it was fires for 99 days, but the fuming continued for, you know, last time I checked carefully, it was 2008, and Andrew Johnson and I went to the site, and the ground was still fuming here and there. They're bringing dirt, dumping it, hauling dirt out. It was pretty peculiar. But what would keep something ongoing, and the part that really jabbed at me, where I realized this is you know, I'm into scary territory here, was when I saw the comment made by someone, I forgot who it was, in one of John's reports, saying that if the reaction is on too large of a scale, there may not be self-quenching.
John, you got any comment about that, about anything, something happening when you get through and things still continue, might happen? Or
We have some samples that seem to accelerate themselves in the aging process that would be a minor form of non-self-quenching, meaning that the samples age extremely rapidly, and they fall apart over time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's very rare, but it has happened. And, you know, when I did the SDIO stuff or the INSCUM demonstrations in 83, I joined into the DOD's SBIR program and got unusual documentation from them in the 80s, and they were experimenting around with such things as antimatter, antimatter propulsion. Antimatter has anti-gravitational effects and this kind of stuff. And they would touch upon non-self-quenching type interactions. Like, I have hundreds of pounds of these papers and documents. And I can visualize very clearly something being ongoing, destroying something. Because if you take a chunk of aluminum metal, and if you add some mercuric chloride to it, you stop the oxidation process of it, that whole bar of metal within some minutes will go into a pile of dust, because aluminum instantly forms.
So what you're saying, John, here, I think you might have went away for audio here, is you've actually got experiments, and then they continue on. Now, Dr. Wood, you've seen this, what, in buildings or in steel that's rusting or whatever?
Yes, Baker's Trust got affected on 9/11. They repaired it afterwards. You remember that building with the big gash down the middle that was right across the street from Tower 2?
Mm-hmm.
And they replaced those missing floors where the gash was, and they repaired the building. But then they started taking the building apart, taking it down. They're still working on it after, you know, what, almost 9 years? Coming up on 9 years? Why are they having to take the building apart after repairing it?
Astounding. Well, I guess what we're saying is some of these things get started and they just don't quit.
And the area where they repaired it, I've got some photos from that area as they're taking it down, when they got down to that level. They look like the beams look like they've been at the bottom of the ocean for 100 years. Extremely rusted. I call it furry rust. It's you know, thick. And it's all uniform.
Yeah, that's some of my samples look like that. And I see it, oddly enough, in other situations and sort of thought, well, that's very strange. It's something to self-disintegrate on its own.
So basically, once you get this started, that's not the end of it, necessarily then.
Right. And the steel, you know, in structural steel, it's not just iron. It's got, carbon and various other add-ons that improve its structural properties and also its anti-corrosive properties. But this steel rusts as though it's pure iron. Like you leave an iron skillet in the sink, it turns bright orange, uniform rust. That is what the steel looked like, so it was no longer steel.
Yeah, what's really amazing is they haven't done any of all of the examinations and metal tests and other things, properties that should have been done, haven't been done. Not
that we've been told.
Right, yeah, right. We don't need to know. We don't need to know.
right.
Okay, we're back from break here. We don't have much time. We got one caller. You have one short question for one or both of the guests?
Wasn't as much of a question as I really just wanted to thank you, the host of the show, for having Dr. Wood and Mr. Hutchinson on your program, because I just found out about both of their research just recently within the last couple months, and it is just so amazing that the information that they've put together and that they've analyzed, and I just think it's really important that people take a look at it for themselves and that they take the opportunity to make up their own mind about this and check out their website and really look at this evidence. And I just want to thank you for having them on the show, because it's very awesome.
Thanks for your comment, because that's what we're about. We're about evidence and facts. We're not mainstream media. It's amazing what's out there that nobody will touch. Okay, we got about 3 minutes. John, you got any closing comments you'd like to make? And then Dr. Wood, if you'd like to finish up here.
It's been really a fantastic show, and I thank you for having me on.
Well, I tell you, if I were an alcoholic, I'd be drinking more, because this is just shocking information. I mean, and why is it not out there? Why are these things not out there? I mean, it's like what Dr. Wood's been doing with 911, all this other nonsense, misdirection, BS, whatevers. Whatever. Dr. Wood, do you have any comments or opening?
If people want to know, you know, what happened, they can open their eyes and look. But it's important that folks sort out what their own thoughts are from what they're being told their thoughts are. And that goes universally for everything. I suggest turning off the television set because that's a type of programming with a particular agenda. We can have free energy if we want it. So we have a choice in that. What was demonstrated on 9/11 is a demonstration of free energy technology. And we can all live free or we can destroy the planet. But we all need to have that choice and know that we're being given that choice. And as one of your callers noticed correctly, is that he who controls the energy controls the people. But do we want a world that's controlled?
Well, not for me. Thank you very much. And this is just, I want to, John, you're a new guest I've never had on. I look forward to having you on again because I'm still in shock. You've been a great guest, and I hope we've rattled some thought processes out there. And I really want to thank, too, Dr. Judy Wood, another great show. You always give a tremendous amount of evidence and facts based on real stuff to make people think. You're just a great guest, and I really want to thank both of you for coming on, and I'm honored that you would take the time out for people to listen, because we need evidence and we need facts, and there are things out there in the universe that we haven't even thought of yet, and they really did a number on Tesla from what I checked out on him.
Real pleasure, sir.
They ran him up and down the flagpole, took his papers at the very end, and some of those still haven't seen the light of day.
That's very true.
That's just absolutely astounding. And the thing is, imagine if we had free energy. What it would do to mankind.
Agreed?
Totally different mindset. We don't need to have wars.
No, and we'd be free. Amazing what we could do. Just, it boggles the mind. It just really does. But we got all these powers to be down here, and we got to fight for truth, and we got to fight and get the evidence out. And I think they may have lost my closing songs here. They had a computer problem here, so we'll probably have to close out. But, I really want to thank both of you for coming on. Dr. Judy Wood, it's another great show, as usual. And, John, I really want to thank you for coming on. And I'm looking forward to having you both on, because we didn't even begin to cover all the things I would like to find out. And I'm sure there's a lot of other people got a lot more questions out there. But, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for being such a wonderful host.
Okay, and as I say, watch out for the federales. They're everywhere.